around the time circle. Okay? And by doing this carefully, you basically reproduce this partition function as a function of temperature, as an integral over one unitary matrix. But now, the answer we've got, but now you've got an interpretation of this unitary matrix. It's the holonomy of the gauge field around the time circle. Or A0 around the time circle. Okay, so that's pretty beautiful. So now that we have this interpretation, let's use it. Okay, now the holonomy of A0 around the time circle, I'm using words like holonomy because it's a mathematics conference. Okay, good. Okay, this thing. If you take the trace of it, it's an object, it's famous in physics. It's called the Polyakov loop. It's the energy of a single quark sitting around at finite temperature. You see, why is that? Because a single quark in the fundamental couples to gauge fields like path-ordered integral trace of A0. It's just sitting there, it just goes around the time circle. Okay? Now, why Polyakov made this famous? Because the trace of this U is an order parameter for confining deconfining transitions. Why is that? A single quark that's sitting around in a confining phase is the end of a flux tube. On R4, the flux tube just goes off to infinity, so that has infinite energy. That translates to the statement that the expectation value of trace of U is zero. On the other hand, in a deconfining phase, that's this plasma around that screens this stuff, and you get some finite energy. So this is a sharp order parameter for confining deconfining phase transitions. Okay? So now this object has appeared very naturally in our game, so let's calculate it in both the high and low temperature phase. Okay. Now, modulo a subtlety that I'm not going to tell you about, because I don't have the time. The answer is the following. In the low temperature phase, trace of U is zero. In the high temperature phase, it's non-zero and completely calculable. Okay? So this transition that we have here should be thought of as a confining-deconfining phase transition. Another indication that that is true is that the three energies of order 1 in the low temperature phase, order n squared in the high temperature phase. 1, think glue balls. N squared, think gluons. So
you're saying there's a gap?
Yes, there's a gap. That's sort of clear because we're putting it on the sphere.
Oh, the gap's all in the sphere.
Yes. So, you see, everything, the only scale in the problem is 1 over R.
So this wouldn't work in quantum mechanics. What would be the scale in quantum mechanics?
Okay, so that...
The coupling...
coupling's dimensional. You say it's scale.
Yeah, that's probably right.
No, the coupling drops out entirely. How can it comes in only in combination with beta.
Okay, so in quantum mechanics, if you were counting... suppose you were solving the following problem. Suppose you were solving the quantum mechanics of two harmonic oscillators, A1 and A2, each of which has frequency 1, each of which is an n cross n matrix, and you've determined to keep only singlets in your problem.
Yeah.
Okay? Then you will get the same kind of behavior with the temperature, Hagedorn temperature being of order 1. Okay. That's a true statement. Now, it's true that you can't think of it as a radius of anything. So the scale I put in is by giving the omega equals 1 for these two harmonic oscillators. Each harmonic oscillator is of unit frequency. You change the frequency of the harmonic oscillator.
A unit frequency with respect to beta.
Yes.
Or
yes.
G squared. What
yes.
Is the combination?
Yeah. You're calculating e to the power trace minus beta e, and the energy of a single excitation of this harmonic oscillator is 1. If it was omega, that would set the scale. Okay. Now, I finished just two or three more physics comments. It's the most important. Okay. Okay. Now, all of this is sort of nice, but we've seen some of it before. We've seen some of it before at strong coupling. You see, Witten, very soon after the ADS-CFT correspondence, Witten worked out the thermodynamic. You see, I've talked about this in general, but of course, at the back of my mind, I really want to apply this to the N equals 4, D equals 4 Yang-Mills theory. Okay? So I'm now applying it to that. Okay. Now, Witten worked out the same problem, but at strong coupling, at lambda goes to infinity. He worked it out using ADS-CFT. Once again, he found two phases in this theory. Found high temperature phase and the low temperature phase. The high temperature phase had free energy of order n squared. The low temperature phase had free energy of order 1. And there was this nice, and once again, it was sort of a confining phase transition, which we could see roughly see, modulo the same subtlety I didn't tell you about before, from the following fact. The fact that, you know, this, if you try to look for a surface of a string that bounds the time circle at the boundary of ADS, then in the phase in which you have thermal ADS, there's no such surface, because the time circle never shrinks to zero. Okay? So that has infinite energy, and we're in the deconfining phase. We're in the confined phase. On the other hand, the black hole is precisely the solution in which the Euclidean black hole is precisely the solution in which the circle shrinks to zero at the angle of the horizon. Right? So you can have some nice cylindrical surface that ends there and gets some finite contribution for the Spoliakov loop. Now, there's an important subtlety I'm not telling you about, because it would take us 10 minutes of discussion. In both my calculation and Witten's calculations, the same subtlety. But modulo that, everything's correct. Okay? So that's nice. So now let's draw a phase diagram for Gangmer's theory as a function of coupling and temperature. Well, we don't really know it, but we want 2 points. We know that here there's a phase transition from low to high temperature. So this is lambda, this is temperature, this is infinity, this is zero. Here there's a phase transition from, both these are phase transitions, are temperatures of order 1 in units of 1 over the radius of the sphere. It's natural to assume that this is the behavior, some line connecting the two. Okay? So this is our conjecture for the phase diagram for Yang-Mills. At all coupling, there's a confining phase and a deconfining phase. Okay. I'll just stop here, though I'd love to answer questions. Yes.
Yes. So, in the Witten's case, he's broken supersymmetry explicitly. In your case, you're breaking via the coupling to S3 because you put it on S3.
And we're dealing with finite temperature. So, in the path integrals, we're giving bosons.
Oh, yeah, finite temperature rule is. Yeah,
yes.
But, okay.
Is the subtlety related to SUN versus UN?
No. Okay, so let me tell you about the subtlety, since the question has come up. Okay. You see, we're trying to measure confinement versus deconfinement by asking, does putting a quark on the sphere have infinite energy or not? But that, if you think about that, that's a stupid question, because a quark on the sphere merely kinematically always has infinite energy, because you can't put a quark on a sphere by Gauss's law. Okay? So, if you do everything correctly, you must get zero for trace U expectation value. And indeed we do. Now, where do we see this in our problem? You see, I wrote down this eigenvalue distribution here, assuming that the eigenvalue distribution was centered around 1. But you can actually see that that this is just 1 in a continuum of solutions, just by shifting this cosine x around any point on the circle. No point on the circle is preferred. Okay? So if you try to integrate over all eigenvalue distributions, of course that will smear out the expectation value of u to 0. Okay? But actually, that's the wrong, in a sense, that's the wrong thing to do. This is about as wrong as saying, well, the ferromagnet has no expectation value of spin, because there are many different solutions pointing in every different direction. You integrate over them all, you get 0 spin, because that's a stupid thing to do. Okay? And how do you see that that's a stupid thing to do? Let's move on with this ferromagnet. You see, the way that a condensed matter physicist would tell you that a ferromagnet has finite value of spin is this. He would say, calculate the expectation value of spin at finite volume and with some H field turned on in the Z direction. Then take the limit V goes to infinity, and after that take the limit H goes to 0. In that process, okay, you might land up with a finite value of spin. Okay. Again, that's how you define the expectation value of spin in a ferromagnet. Now, we can do the same thing here. We can break the symmetry a little by changing our matrix model by coupling it to trace U plus trace U dagger, epsilon times trace U plus trace U dagger. That picks out 0 as a special point. So it breaks the symmetry of these solutions, pick out just one of them. Okay, and then when we do these calculations in this order, first take the n goes to infinity limit, which allows a phase transition at all, and then take the limit epsilon goes to 0, we'll end up with a non-zero value for trace u. Now, adding this trace u plus trace u dagger to the action has a physical interpretation. You see, we're classically adding a plasma of quarks and anti-quarks. That's what adding trace u plus trace u dagger to, okay? Or sort of, it's like adding classically a Higgs field to the problem. That tells you why it was possible to put a quark in a sphere, because in the Higgs phase, you know, field lines can end. So you can put a quark on the sphere. But after having done that, even when you take the Higgsing of the theory to zero, you still have a non-infinitesimal, you know, finite expectation. Okay, so that's the sense in which all these things have to be interpreted. But of course, it's the only sense in which it could have been interpreted, if you think hard. This is how phase transitions work. Yes?
Sorry, but the Theta Omega is a global symmetry, right?
Yes.
So you don't have this Gauss's law issue there. I'm missing something.
Yes. It's true that it's not... It's a different kind of issue. But it's the same kind of solution that would allow you to...
Okay.
Yes.
You have some
kind of
tachyon around the space transition point?
Yes.
So
yes.
Where does this
tachyon
come from?
Okay. So, now, suppose you look at the eigenvalue distribution, okay, and you look at the quadratic fluctuations of eigenvalues around the uniform distribution, okay? One, we've expanded in momentum modes. The unit momentum mode becomes tachyonic when f of x goes to 1. Okay. Now, this actually gives you... So there are many things that I've not said here, especially about more speculative stuff that we've been trying to talk about. Mm-hmm. But this actually makes you hope that the following might be true. You see that the eigenvalue distribution sounds a little like it's becoming the string. You know, it's becoming the string in a t-dual of time. Okay. Why t-dual of time? Because, you know, inserting each of these, inserting trace u, is like inserting e to the power I theta. But we know that trace u is a winding string. We know this from ADS-CFT. So inserting a winding string is like inserting momentum in this eigenvalue distribution. So it looks like it's building up, you know, this is like building up the time direction, but in a t-dual description. Okay? That's why, now, we also know that the Hagedorn transition is traditionally the first winding mode going tachyonic. In our description, we see it's the first momentum mode going tachyonic. Okay. It all looks very suggestive and very... looks like it's leading somewhere, but I have no idea where.
So, do you think this phase transition has this mode to have the condensation? So
exactly.
So precisely, this is the condensation of this tachyon.
Exactly. This mode becomes negative mass square. Exactly.
So it's precisely. So can you actually have some kind of picture? What's the precise degrees of freedom after you go through the phase transition?
Well, in terms of gauge theory, we know what it is.
Right.
Okay. What can you say in terms of string theory?
Right.
Well, I don't have any more to say about our model than I told you. But let me say some words. Mm-hmm. In this phase diagram here, you see the Hagedorn transition. See, it's natural to identify the Hagedorn transition of this gauge theory with the Hagedorn transition of the dual string theory. Okay, it's a very natural thing to do. So, you can ask the question, what is the end point of the Hagedorn transition? In gauge theory language, it's clear, it's just these free gluons. But that's not a satisfying answer, because we want an answer in terms of string theory, in terms of the bulk. Okay, it's hard to get an answer in terms of the bulk here, because everything's so small. Like, we're in the region where the bulk is very small. There's not much of a bulk here. Okay, but if we now take... We continue, you see, this, according to our conjecture, is in the same phase as this point. Okay? So it's like small volume version of what's happening here. And what's happening here is an ADS Schwarzschild black hole. Okay? So if you want a slogan for this, the slogan for the answer is this, the end point of the Hagedorn transition is a black hole. That's my slogan.
It was a nice end of the... Yeah, I don't even say that.